welcome to episode 19 of Role Play Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lighthearted Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands in the tabletop role play gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. We are now on our third episode of the sound series that I've been doing, and I got to chat with Brandon Calhoun, the composer behind Ghost of Red Mountain. Brandon travels back and forth between Korea and Alaska for work, but manages to create some beautiful music pieces wherever he goes. We chat about his processes for working on collaborations, considerations for composing for podcasts and streams, creating the compositions, and some of his future goals. I've linked to a couple of the pieces that he mentions down in the show notes, and I highly recommend that you go check them out to get a feel of his creations. Real quick, I've got a few items of business to go over before we jump into the interview. If this is your first time tuning into the show, welcome. This podcast is a part of Lighthearted Adventures, which is a small company that I co-founded with my husband. We offer a weekly blog on our website where you'll find tips for running games, free monthly one-shot adventures, product reviews, and more. You'll find the blog at lightheartadventures.com. Brenton also creates beautiful dungeon maps, and I'm excited to announce that the Rime of the Frostmaiden map pack that I've mentioned in the last few episodes hit silver over at DM's Guild. So thank you all for your support, and I hope that you enjoy using the maps in your Icewind Dale adventures. To pick up a copy for yourself or explore our other map packs, you can find all of them by either going to dmsguild.com and searching for Lightheart Adventures as the author, or you can go to lightheartadventures.com/shop to find all of our DM's Guild and Drive-Thru RPG publications in one spot. Some other ways that you can support us and the show are by checking out our Patreon, subscribing to the show on your podcast player of choice, leaving a review, and checking out our affiliate links. One of those affiliates is Friday Afternoon Tea. Brenton and I recently got to visit her shop and meet Friday in person, and it was so cool to officially meet her. We came home with quite the treasure trove of tea, and I've been working my way through them over the last couple of weeks. I have yet to find one that I don't like, but inching towards the favorite list is the Critical Blend Tea. It's blue, sparkly, tastes very strongly of vanilla, and it's just full of joy. To try any of her teas, go to fridaytea.com, enter in code LIGHTHEART, ADV, to receive 10% off your order and help support this show. Alrighty, let's go meet Brandon. All right, friends, I am very excited to now introduce you to Brandon Calhoun, the composer behind Ghost of Red Mountain. Hello, Brandon. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Glad to hear it. I am really interested. I know that you are in Korea right now, and that was a fun time zone difference to figure out.
God, yeah. It's what, like 5, 6 p.m. for you?
Yep.
10 a.m. for me.
You know, I'm just glad that weekends do exist because then we can figure that out. It's a lot harder when people are working like normal hours.
God, yeah.
But yeah, to just kind of kick things off, can you tell us a bit about who you are and how you got into gaming?
Yeah, sure. So I am originally from Mississippi and the satanic panic was still super strong there. So my whole young life, I was kept away from D&D, but I started playing like role-playing games, which were still kind of frowned upon, but not completely illegal. So I started playing the Elder Scrolls games. And then when I got a little bit older, I read an article that was like, the Elder Scrolls games are literally D&D, but the dice rolls happen under the hood. And I was like, what? That's what D&D is? And then I saw the episode of Community where they play D&D. And then this is my third time in Korea, and last time I was here, I fell in love with Critical Role, and it just opened my eyes to what D&D could be, because I had played once before, and one of my friends was super drunk and tried to seduce the dragon at the end of the campaign. We didn't play anymore after that, but yeah, I fell in love with I was just pulled in by the depth of storytelling that can happen, and that's what pulled me into the game.
Okay, I definitely have multiple follow-up questions on that. The first being that I also grew up kind of in the South, but in a town that was liberal-ish for the South. And so my like parental guidance was very much, you know, we weren't allowed to celebrate Halloween. Like, I couldn't watch any movies with witches in them, even like Disney witches.
Oh, God, yeah, same.
But like, my community wasn't like that. So, tell me more about the Satanic Panic and just what the community experience was.
I can remember, like, we were very active in church and stuff like that. And I just remember it being, like, my parents were into imagination and the arts, and they love music and stuff. But it was all, it had to be Christian. So, like you were talking about, there was no Halloween. We didn't put up a Christmas tree. Because there's like an obscure Bible verse that talks about not hanging up a tree. And so like there was all these like little things that they tried to shelter me from because the intent was good, but like the methodology kind of sucked or the reasoning sucked.
I haven't heard of the no Christmas tree one. That's intense.
It's weird.
Yeah, I think after a couple of years, so I don't know, by the time I was late elementary school, my mom finally relented and let us go to the church fall festival if we dressed up as Bible characters.
Oh, God, I remember fall festivals. Like, I'm so glad you're mentioning this because, like, that's what we had. That was our it was like it's such a naked excuse to do Halloween, but not call it Halloween. But yeah, there was like pamphlets against Pokemon that we had.
What?
There were like, yeah, we played, my friend brought Pokemon cards to school and we were like looking at them and that got shut down because the Pokemon evolved.
Oh my gosh.
And so like, oh, they're teaching evolution. And dude, it was just so ridiculous. but I'm glad I got away from that kind of narrow-mindedness.
Yeah, for sure. So then you said that the first time you got really into it was your last time in Korea. Was that with some people like there with you or were you remoting back online?
Yeah. So it started, I went on the Looking for Game subreddit and found somebody that was running a West Marches game. And I played a character in there and then met up with, again, through the LFG subreddit, I found a friend named Beth, and she DM'd a campaign that I played in, and we're still like friends to this day. We've been friends for like 3 years now, and we met through Reddit D&D. And then on top of that, I started DMing a campaign with some coworkers. We played so much. Like, we played an unhealthy amount of D&D in that year. We played every weekend, at least once a weekend, and most of our sessions were 6 to 8 hours long.
Nice.
So it was just, they would show up at like lunchtime and we would play D&D until like 8 p.m. And then we would pack up all the stuff, put it back in my dorm room, and then go out onto the town and like have drinks and sing karaoke and all that kind of stuff. So it was like such a good bonding experience for us. Like, I loved it.
Yeah, that's really awesome. What are you playing right now?
Right now, I'm playing occasionally in a game that Beth is running just for me and one other friend. And then I run a cyberpunk campaign sometimes, but it's kind of hit or miss, I feel like. I feel like I don't have enough of a grasp on that system to make the rules calls that I want to. Like, you know how, like, D&D, you get comfortable enough that you can throw out a certain rule if it doesn't work in the moment, right? You can, because you know those rules, you can say, okay, that doesn't work for the story in this moment, we're going to do this. Or, I don't like that rule because my game doesn't support that. I don't know Cyberpunk well enough to make those calls. And so sometimes the combat gets super bogged down because I don't know the system very well. But yeah, I'm trying to scratch that cyberpunk itch but I don't know if that rule set is for me.
Fair enough. And that definitely makes sense, yeah. Where if you don't have a rule book memorized, it's going to take some time. And that's okay.
Yeah. But overall, it's really fun.
Oh, yeah. I haven't really broken into the cyberpunk TTRPG world yet. I feel like there's so many games that are just, I'm waiting. Or they're mm-hmm. waiting for me to play them. They're in a pile. And I keep buying more. So it's just going to keep growing.
I'm going to shout this game out. I don't know a lot of people that have played it, but I saw it on Geek and Sundry, and it's called Dread. It is super great if you don't have a lot of time and you have people who are new to role-playing and stuff like that, because it is so rules-light, and all you need is literally a piece of paper for each player and a Jenga tower.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the game works off of, it works really well for horror. So you're GMing and telling a scary story, and every time the players want to react to something, you as the GM decide, okay, you're going to need to pull a Jenga block to make that work. And if you knock the Jenga tower over, your character dies or is removed from the story. And I played that with some friends that had never played, like, tabletop RPGs before. And it was so effective, and it was so, like, that mechanic works so well for horror. Like, the tension of pulling that block and then trying to put it back on top without knocking it over. It's so good. I love it.
I have played that one time. It was a couple years ago. And we were camping with a group of friends. So we did it at nighttime. So the only light around us was, like, the fire behind us and then two little lanterns on the table so that we could kind of see what we're doing. But of course, it's dim light, so that makes it even harder. And there's just the fact of, like, we're surrounded all over the place by trees. And it just, yeah, as it got to be like 11 p.m., it was so creepy.
Oh, God, I love that game. I want to find an excuse to play it again, but I don't have a Jenga tower with me, so.
Well, should rectify that. And yeah, be good. So I want to switch gears a little bit and start learning about your music journey. You know, when did that start? And just kind of how that's grown over the years.
Okay. So my whole family plays at least one musical instrument. My dad runs a small home recording studio. And for as long as I can remember, my parents played in Christian music group. So I naturally got interested in music through them. So my dad taught me guitar when I started learning when I was really little, but I kind of fell off of it because it was too difficult for me at the time. But I started back up at like 12 years old, I want to say. I would wake up before school. My dad would wake up with me and he would teach me how to make one chord. And he was like, okay, there's how you make that chord. I'm going back to sleep, practice it, and I'll wake up when it's time to go to school. And he's like, and when you can play that chord perfectly, I'll teach you the next chord. So once I grew up and like moved out, I fell in love with like metal music. I went to school for music production because I wanted to run a heavy metal studio. I wanted to be like the studio you go to record heavy metal albums. But during school, there was a project where they were like, oh, we want you to compose music for a fake video game. And that pulled me in. Doing that, I was like, oh no, this is what I want to do. I want to compose this music. And then I found out later that the Elder Scrolls games that I had grown up loving were basically all the music is written by one dude, and he does it all with a computer and a keyboard. It's not even a real orchestra. It's like, you know, this dude and his computer most of the time. And that was just like revelatory for me. And so I fell in love with like movie scores from there and started trying to get some work doing like film scores and video game scores. And then I married those two concepts of loving the storytelling from D&D, but I got really annoyed because my players I would use like Elder Scrolls music in my game. And my players would be like, oh, I love this song from Elder Scrolls or from Skyrim or, you know, whatever. And I remember being like, that takes them, the recognition I felt like took them out of the world we were building. And so I was like, what if I wrote music to, what if I scored my world basically? And so I was like, oh, this is it. This is what I want to do. What if I can, you know, score people's D&D campaigns? And so, yeah, I started that. I like put out a thread on Reddit and that was the first place I did anything. I was like, hey, I want to score your game, and met some really cool people through that. And then it's kind of like snowballed from there.
How long ago was that?
I want to say 2 years, I think.
So from that first, well, I guess, yeah. What was the response to that first post?
So because I was new and stupid, I was like, yeah, I'll score four people's, I'll write a track for four people's games. And so the response was pretty big. I remember the way I put it out there was like, tell me the story of your campaign. Like, give me, you know, the elevator pitch for your campaign. And if I like it, I'll compose for it. And one was like a cute, the pitch was like, it's a cute kind of love story and everything's frozen. It's cold all the time in this place, but the people are really warm and nice. So I was like, that sounds cool. And somebody was like, 1920s Chicago jazz bar. I was like, okay, that'll be fun. And this guy was, another guy was like, explorers in unknown, going up the Nile River, and it's an unknown world, an uncharted world, and they're exploring it. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. And the last one I remember was, oh God, I just realized I remember all four of them. The last one was like, yeah, there's a guy who is wanted to be the hero that was like foretold in the prophecy, but realized he couldn't be. So now he became the villain to force the hero to rise up. And I remember thinking that was such a cool concept that I jumped on board with that one too. So yeah, it was a pretty big response and I had a blast doing it, but it was too much to be doing at once.
So how long were the, if you remember, were the pieces that you did for those four?
Most of them were really short. They ended up being, I think the longest one was like 3 minutes, which is pretty average, but like most of them ended up being like a minute long just because people wanted to play them at the beginning of a session to kind of like signal, hey, it's starting time, or they wanted to intro their podcast with it. And you don't want 5 minutes worth of music to intro your podcast.
Yeah, I remember when I was trying to find music for this, I found something that I really liked and I was like, all right. And it had like a little package. And so here's the short version. Even the short version was 45 seconds. And everyone told me like, no, that's too long. I was like, okay, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, that whole thing is a challenge all on its own because like you've got to tell the story or like, you know, introduce the concept of what's going to happen or what kind of podcast this is without wearing out your welcome.
Yeah.
Like it's, and so it's like 10 seconds. I want you to make me fall in love with these people. Go. And so you have to do that. It's crazy.
Yeah. I admire anyone that does any kind of audio production so much. And like, I mean, specifically with sound effects and with music and composition, because yeah, I mean, especially with music, you have to tell a story. And it's not like you get to have a 60-minute piece. I mean, you could, but I can't even imagine how much work that would be.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think there is like a tendency, and there was a tendency when I was like first starting to try to write the most like beautiful thing I could, or the most like trying to write for myself, basically. But my thoughts have kind of changed on it, and it should all, in my opinion anyway, it should all be the story of the person that's commissioning the song, right? Like if you came to me and you said, hey, I want a song about a vampire who has been alive for 500 years and all he wants to do is get back to his family. If I focus at any point on, but how can I draw attention to the music, then I'm messing up. Like, the whole thing should be about, okay, what kind of emotions does this guy feel? And what kind of world does this person live in? Like, all that kind of stuff. It's all, like you said, it all should be story first.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. Just that whole concept. And while I never got very far into pursuing any of the musical things I've done in my life, it's always, anytime I get back into playing the piano or the guitar or singing, I'm like, why did I stop? Like, music is just such an important part of life.
It's so therapeutic. Like, even if you're just doing it for yourself, mm-hmm. and that's a big thing, is we're in this age where everything we do, we find a way to sell it, or find a way to try to sell it. Like, oh, I like D&D. I better turn that into a show. And like, nothing wrong with doing that. But it's important, I think, to have something that's for you. And it's like, just for you. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think even if you're just doing it to make yourself feel good, you should do it. It's fun. It's great.
Yeah. So do you find yourself in kind of a struggling or in a bit of a trap if you're focusing on making like commissions for music all of the time? Like, how do you separate creating music just for yourself for fun with, you know, trying to make it more of, I guess, a monetized hobby?
So one of the things I've been doing is the stuff I'm working on for just me. I have a friend here that comes over and we write metal music together. And I don't think that's ever going to see the light of day, realistically. But it's so fun to do. Like, we just sit here and bounce ideas off of each other. And sometimes it'll be this grind. It'll be like 4 or 5 hours of work to get 15 seconds of song done. But in the end, it's so fun to do, and just hanging out with him as we bounce these ideas back and forth. But yeah, that's I think my thing that I'm just going to keep for me.
And now that you've started to get more into this broader composition, do you still find metal to be your favorite?
As far as like listening, yeah, I listen to, if I'm not listening to film or video game scores, it's metal, basically. It's just my favorite thing. I think there's a similarity to them that I can't quite describe or put words to, but to me, the logic of metal lines up really well with the logic of a film score. I don't know. And so to me, they're almost the same, and I love them.
That's really interesting. I've never really thought that, but now I feel like I want to go and analyze.
Yeah, I think there's a drama and a cinematic aspect to it. I think there's like an aspect where as a younger person, you take it more seriously. You take like the attitude of metal more seriously. But as you get older, you realize like these people are kind of doing it tongue in cheek. And there's, you know, they're not painting their faces white and black because they think they're cool. They're doing it to like put on a show and become characters. And so there's that cinematic quality to the whole thing that I think is that thread that binds them together. For me anyway. I don't know. I could be way wrong. There's probably somebody that's way into black metal that's going to listen to this and just be like, no, I paint my face white and black because it's who I am. And they're just going to hate me. But here we are.
Here we are. Honestly, though, I do think that is, yeah, just a really interesting and cool perspective on it.
Here's hoping.
Okay, so going back to those four pieces that you did as just part of a subreddit post, what happened between then and, I guess, now? And kind of how did Ghost of Red Mountain come about?
So the Ghost of Red Mountain thing comes from, God, I'm talking about Elder Scrolls a whole lot here. But Red Mountain is the volcano that's on Morrowind, Vardenfell, I believe. It's the mountain that's there. And I was trying to think of a name because I wanted to do a solo metal project. again, this is just, it's hangover, or it's just an attachment from an older time that I've given up on. My band name was going to be Ghost of Red Mountain, and it was just all going to be me. And I was just never going to like show my face or like put myself out there. I was going to hide behind that moniker, Ghost of Red Mountain, and just put out obscure metal music. But I started doing this composing thing, and it just kind of stuck. I just like it. I'm probably going to have to rebrand to my name eventually. I'll just have to grow up and just become Brandon Calhoun Music or something like that. But for now, Ghost of Red Mountain is pretty cool.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with having a cool name like that and having company name separate from real name. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the story of the name. But what happened after those first pieces that you did? Yeah, I guess just like what steps have you taken since then to kind of grow your presence? And I know you've got a bunch of videos on YouTube, so just love to learn more about what you've been doing.
Yeah, so what I kind of do is I try to consistently work. So what I'm trying to do is always like reach out to people. I'll like cold message people sometimes that I just like their show. And I've done that. Like I've watched, I don't watch as much actual plays or listen to as many actual plays anymore as I used to. But I found some friends, their show is called Fateful Encounters. I found them and was just like, hey, I really like the idea of you guys' show. Do you want music or do you need music? And they were like, yeah, heck yeah. Right. You know, what do you got? And so we like started down that path from there. And that's how most of it's been. Most of it has been making friends with people and then those people being like, hey, I also like what you do. Can you, you know, give us some music?
Once you do have a piece that you're going to work on, whether it's something for yourself or one of these collaboration type of pieces, I would love to just get into the nitty gritty of what equipment you're using and what kind of software and just how that works.
Okay. Yeah. So everything I do is in Logic Pro, which is Apple's thing, because I use an Apple computer. I do basically everything. Orchestra is coming through my computer. I don't play any orchestral instruments yet. I'm trying to learn the violin, but I play guitar, bass, keyboard, and I can fake it on the drums. So if there's guitar, I'll usually play the actual guitar. But for the like orchestral instruments or piano, it's just a keyboard that I play that goes into the computer and makes the sound. As far as like the process of it, I think it's super collaborative and I try to keep it really collaborative. I'm working on a project right now with someone, and the whole idea is, and the way I like to do things is, you tell me the story and what you're trying to convey, like themes and emotions and touchstones and stuff like that. And what I'll do is I'll write like a 30-second piece of music that's just basically a vibe check. It's like, when you told me those things, this is what I heard, and send that off. And you will come back to me, or the person will come back to me and be like, yes, on these aspects of it. Like, oh, I really like that guitar, but the bass is a little bit out of line with what I'm trying to do. Or it sounds too happy, or it sounds a little bit too sad, a little too scary, like that kind of stuff. And we iterate off of that until we get to the final point. So it starts with a little short building block, and then it evolves and grows into something that hopefully tells the story.
Are you predominantly doing music for like podcasts and shows, or is it a little more spread out?
Mostly it's for podcasts. I would say probably about 90% of what I've done has been for tabletop RPG podcasts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's really cool because I think there's like a breadth of storytelling that's going on in the community. Like I had someone approach me about writing music for a Western, like it's Cowboys Meets Wizards. And that's super unique. It's a very specific, and you can tell it's from somebody's heart. You know what I mean? Somebody loves D&D and they also love cowboys. And so that's how this came about. And so I think those things deserve their own music. Like, just because you're a small storyteller doesn't mean that your story should have to rip off somebody else's music. So, yeah, I want to try to facilitate that storytelling with as much love as the person who's telling the story.
Now I really want to hear what you came up with.
It's on my YouTube. I can't remember the name of it.
There's one thing I've learned. It's coming up with names for any kind of product, whether it's an actual physical product or something digital like this. It's so hard.
Yeah, I don't think there's a good way to do it. Like, I mean, or if there is, I haven't found it yet. But it is called The House Always Wins. Yeah, so moderately pretentious.
I will include a link to that in the show notes. Well, okay, so one thing I did want to ask about was that I saw that recently you were part of a collaboration for a Candlekeep Mysteries pack. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about that? Like, I'd love to know if there was a specific chapter that you did a piece for, and I'd also like to know how you became involved with that group.
I started a Twitter, or I devoted my Twitter to trying to meet people in the RPG community, because I originally started using it kind of like Facebook, because I'm old and I don't know how the internet works. But so I started like, oh, you find communities on here is what it appears to be. And so that's what I use it for. And so found a bunch of friends in the tabletop community. And one of them is Stuart, who's Dweezil Vanzapier from Dice and Desire, I believe. And he's a composer, and he sent me a message, and he was like, hey, I see that you're a composer. I like some of your stuff. We have a group of composers, and we have a Discord. Do you want to join up? And I was like, sure, send me the link. And so I joined that, and I can't remember whose idea it was, but it's a really good idea. The person came out and was like, what we should do is each person takes a chapter and writes a 3 to 5 minute piece of music for it that people can use to put in the background while they play that chapter. And so that's what I did. I wrote a piece of music for The Book of the Raven by Chris Perkins.
What can you tell us about just the feel of that piece?
So I reading the story for it, like kind of spoilers, I guess, but it has to do a lot with the Shadowfell and were-ravens. So it also has kind of an overall spooky vibe, as most of Candlekeep did to me. So I started with the chord progression to 1989 Batman, which has this like great, like mysterious, you know, creepy tone to it. But I used the sounds I was using was mostly an orchestra that had been recorded to tape, and the tapes had been mangled. So as you play it, it comes through all kind of like warbly and like with pops and clicks in it. And so I like fell in love with that sound. And I also tried to like pull in, God, I'm not even going to, that's too pretentious even for me. I tried to pull in like plucks of strings to kind of sound bird-like, because it evokes that feeling of, you know, you can see a bird hopping around. Or, you know, kind of pecking at things with the strings being plucked instead of bowed. And yeah, so I did that. And then that's kind of how it evolved, is I kind of built from that and ended with some like building woodwinds that come in. And those also like everything I did was try to be like, OK, there's a creepiness to it, but there's also like a little bit of a playful element. And then there's something really dark and sinister underneath, which is to represent the Shadowfell. That's what I was going for. And hopefully I hit at least like 20% of that.
It sounds like a really cool piece.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of it when I got done, honestly. Which is always good. It's always good when you get done with something and you don't hate it.
Truth. I feel like we are our own worst critics all the time.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I hate that guy's work.
Is there any person or group that is like on your dream wish list of being able to collaborate with them on something?
This is super dumb to say, but like the people that got me into it, I would love to work with Critical Role. Just to be like, to come full circle with it, you know what I mean? Like, they're the thing that got me into being like, oh no, you can tell like really deep stories with this. I would be blown away to work with those guys. But yeah, I honestly really like working with anybody, like anybody who's passionate about the thing and the story. That passion like really affects me. I guess I'm really easily influenced, but like when somebody is like super hyped about the thing they're working on and they're, you know, in that initial conversation we have where it's like, okay, tell me the story of your campaign. If the person is like, oh yeah, this happens. And then, but no, the whole time this guy was there and it just sucks me in and I get super excited and I'll spend like the next few days like messaging them about how excited I am and like, oh, I came up with an idea. I can't wait to show it to you. And it's super fun. I love it.
So something that I'm actually really curious about is that I know that you're like currently in Korea, but then you're able to go home sometimes. So does your equipment go back and forth with you? Do you have equipment with you in Korea?
I have all my equipment here in Korea. I didn't bring it home this time when I went to Alaska, but I will because next time I go home, I'll be going home permanently, at least semi-permanently. And then I'll bring it all with me. But gotcha. Yeah, I try to keep everything at my like main base of operations.
Sure, that makes sense. Especially once you started talking about like, oh, if there's guitar, I'll use the guitar or the keyboard. I was like, oh man, that is a lot to have to carry.
Yeah, that's a nightmare to get through the airport with.
I bet. So yeah, one thing I would love to know too is now that you've been doing this for a little while, are there any goals that you're working towards?
Yeah, so my problem, like my character flaw is overly ambitious. So I worked with Zine a while back. You might know him from Sword and Quill. He was working on a video game and he was like, hey, it would be cool if you did the music for this video game. So he built a demo and I kind of like wrote a few pieces of music for that demo. And when he sent me the demo with my music in it, I legitimately almost cried sitting at my computer, just seeing, like, I was just blown away. And so having talked to him a little bit about that, I decided to go back to school for game design because I want to try to make games just from the ground up by myself, if I can, and see what happens.
Oh. Like
little indie games.
That's awesome.
Yeah, video games have been a huge part of my life. And then now tabletop games are, but still video games. I've got like my PlayStation out here with me and I play a lot. So yeah, I want to hopefully be a part of that at some point.
That is really, really cool. I wouldn't say that that's overly ambitious.
Yeah, it's a big thing to learn though, mm-hmm. especially like as an adult, like, oh, let's learn how to make a video game. There's a whole lot to it.
So I know that you just kind of recently started that, but is there anything in particular that you think interests you the most right now? Like whether it's the story development part, the programming, the art?
I like the convergence of all those things. So it is my pet peeve in a game when it tells you a thing and then the thing it shows you is the opposite of that. It creates that like that dissonance between like, oh, my character is a nice guy, but you're also running around just like murdering hundreds of people. It doesn't feel right. But so when you get a game that's like, oh, you're in this game, you're going to be killing people and your character is also a jerk and everything is like dark and gritty, then it kind of like converges into this. Oh, no. Yeah, this guy's bad. But on the flip side, when you have something that's like, oh, it's light. And like I'm playing Breath of the Wild right now, like way too late. but the music in that is so sparse and light and lonely that you really get that vibe. Like, it's still peaceful and everything, but you get that like loneliness that Link has got to be feeling when you're playing the game. And it's just so good, like when those things line up. And that's what I want to do. I just want to tell some kind of story that has a coherent meaning and hopefully affects people the way the stories have affected me.
I'm excited for you. I think that'll be a really cool experience to get. And I wish you well after you finish that degree.
Hopefully. Here's hoping, I guess.
So I do want to take some time to ask a question that I ask in every interview.
Okay.
Which is, when you look back at the journey that you have taken with getting into composition and then realizing that there was opportunity to create music for these tabletop games and scenarios, just looking back over all of that, what would you say has been the most challenging part?
I honestly, like you said, you mentioned being your own worst critic, and that is super true for me. I hesitated on even starting because it was like, well, I'm not at that professional level, so I shouldn't be starting. I'm going to school now for video game development. The first thing I did when I got out of high school was apply to a college for video game development, and then I didn't go through with it because of the self-doubt. So I think like the big overarching theme to my life basically is, even when you doubt yourself, push through and do it. If you want to do something, don't worry about being at a level that you deserve to put your stuff out there. Just do it and put something out you believe in.
That is just amazing advice. I definitely agree with you that it's so hard to start. It's the hardest part, I feel.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's just so hard being like dealing with the imposter syndrome of it, because you look around and you see people who are so good. Like, no matter what you're doing, you're going to look around and, like, if you're a GM, you're going to look around and see your Matt Mercers and your other, like, major players in the tabletop community that are just so good. And it's normal to feel that, well, I don't deserve to have a seat at the table. But everybody does. It's a game, and it's people telling their stories, and it's all, should be anyway, all out of a love of the thing. So you shouldn't be scared to, you know, put your foot forward and be out there. It's such a hard thing, because it's so vulnerable being like, oh, I worked for hours on this and it came out to 3 minutes long. Please listen to it and don't hate it.
Yeah. Is there anything that you found that kind of helps you get through those periods, whether it's the, you know, imposter syndrome or the, as you just said, you spent 3 hours on it and it's really short?
One of the things I have to do is pull myself out of the analytics, like YouTube's analytics, or like, you know, this many people listen to this song, and this many people, you know, watch the whole thing, and it'll tell you like most people tuned out at this point and most people didn't even click that one. They liked this one. And so you can really, like, some of that's really useful. And if you're the kind of person who can get in there and be like, oh, and learn from that kind of stuff and move forward with it, that's great. But I feel like most of the time I'm just hurting myself by looking at those numbers. It's like tongue in your cheek where you bit it. It's already done and it hurts. So you keep aggravating that wound by being like, why don't I have more views on this thing? Because I really love this thing. But all you can do is put it out there. And if people like it, they like it. And if they don't, they don't.
That's also really good advice.
I just wish I could follow it more often. Like, right? It's easy to say, but it's so hard to do.
I'm a person that loves analytics and I love building spreadsheets and figuring things out. And I'd say that about 80% of the time, it's motivation to be like, all right, here's what I can be doing better. But then, yeah, the other 20% of the time, I am like right there with you. I'm just, this sucks. Like, no one's engaging. Like, I'm doing everything I can.
Yeah, it's brutal to give so much of yourself to something you love and get I would rather have somebody be like, oh, I hate that thing, than put something out there and just nobody hears it or nobody sees it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just such a crushing moment to put something out there and just there's nothing back from the void. And it's just, ugh, it's so scary. I hate it.
Okay, I'm going to stop torturing us with this. So let's flip this around and say, what has been the most rewarding part of this musical within tabletop journey?
The most rewarding part is there's the tabletop community as a whole, right? And then within that, there are like sub communities of, you know, like each podcast has their own little corner, their own little niche in that community. And one of the things that I really like about what I do is I get to be part of not just the community at large, but I get to be like a little part of those sub communities. And it's so fun, like seeing how these communities grow and interact with each other. And like, just again, that infectious love for storytelling that is constant through basically the whole tabletop community is just so refreshing. And I love being part of it.
That's true. I feel like since you are working on so many podcasts, like, I mean, yes, there is absolutely so much subculture within this group, especially just on Twitter. That is nice that you are able to kind of get some more of that connection and get in and drill down, I guess, into more of the subcultures.
Yeah, it's great. And like, one of the things that I really like about it is the interaction with the people. Because, you know, sometimes you're watching a podcast or an actual play on Twitch, and you don't really get to interact with the people who are putting it on. And so it can, like, you can get removed from that passion for the game. But when you have to talk to those people to write the music they want, you can see how in love with their stories they are and how in love with this game that they are. And you can see how it impacts people and how, God, I just love that intertwining of all of it. It's so good.
Man, I am really enjoying this conversation. Just like getting all the feel good vibes.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we are going to have to wind down pretty soon, but I would love to know if there are any upcoming projects that you are allowed to talk about that you're looking forward to.
So school has taken up a bunch of my time. And the one major project I'm working on right now, I don't think I can say anything about.
Fair enough.
So no, but keep your eyes and ears peeled, because when I'm allowed to talk about it, I will.
I mean, that is a pretty common answer that I get, I'm not going to lie. Is there a time frame of which we can be maybe looking forward to finding out what that is?
I'm going to start working on it, or start back working on it this weekend. So hopefully within the next couple weeks, like worst case scenario, July, August, I believe.
Okay. I mean, July is not that far out at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got halfway through June, but here we are. Well, cool. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on today. This was really fun. Where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at Ghost of Red Mountain. I have a Facebook that I don't really use, Ghost of Red Mountain. YouTube, Ghost of Red Mountain. I'm around. But yeah, I really appreciate you having me. This has been super fun. Like you said, it was such a like good and uplifting conversation.
Yes, and I had a lot of fun.
Same.
That's it for today's episode of Role Play Grow. To check out the show notes, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave me a review. Reviews are one of the best ways to help a newer podcast get up off the ground. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR to see me tweet about other things like my dog and World of Warcraft. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week on Role Play Grow.